Welcome to Marketing Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. Here's your host, Stacy Jones.
Welcome to Marketing Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. I'm Stacy Jones, and I'm so happy to be here with you all today. And I want to give a very warm welcome to Jim Heininger. Jim is the founder of The Rebranding Experts, which he founded after 30 years of business and brand strategy experience for P&G, McDonald's, Anheuser-Busch, and others. His agency was purposely designed to be the only agency with the comprehensive services necessary to rebrand organizations. With a fundamentally different viewpoint than traditional branding firms, Jim sees rebranding as a marketing strategy and a strategic growth accelerator. He coaches CEOs through the rebranding process, aligning their executive team, and helping to execute complete name changes and new customer promises. He regularly speaks at national conferences and is a regular contributor to Forbes on the topic of rebranding. Today, Jim and I are going to be chatting about how to strategically leverage rebranding as a core marketing strategy. We'll learn what works from Jim's perspective, what should be avoided, and how some businesses miss the mark. Jim, welcome. So happy to have you here today.
Stacy, great to be with you.
What I always love to start off with is, how did you get here today? You are a master of rebranding, which is a very core niche business, but you have a tremendous amount of experience that brought you here.
It's a great question. I had so much strategic communications and marketing and branding experience and realized that organizations, when they went through this rebranding process, needed to think of a lot more. They needed change management. They needed leadership engagement and communications, executive coaching. They needed employee engagement and employer branding and so forth. And those were all part of that bigger kind of capability set than what a traditional branding firm or a marketing firm might offer, and that a rebranding firm was necessary to be able to lead clients through that process end to end, and to make sure that everything that was done right to make sure that they launched successfully in their new brand. So it was really when we saw the work and realize what always needed to do it successfully, we decided, let's build our own firm that can do that.
And what's interesting is you are a rebranding firm. You are not a branding firm. So you are taking a different position where there has already been an established entity, an established brand in essence, total essence, actuality, and you're tearing it apart. That's very different.
We're standing up a new one. Yeah. And that's why, you know, really kind of gives you the core of how we're different is that rebranding is change. It signals change within an organization. And so that requires so much more than just the branding piece of it. And it's been exciting. It's a chance to lead a lot of organizations through a real brand-led business transformation that they never had anticipated they were going to go forward with.
And I'm assuming that it's not just the logo that you're rebranding. When we're talking about rebranding, it goes way deeper than that. What kind of things does that include?
So interestingly enough, when we start with a lot of organizations, they really don't understand the power of what a brand can do for their organization. So we do a lot of education work up front to get their leadership fully on board with what we are trying to create in terms of a new brand, because they might not have been doing branding very well to that point in time. So we look at it as, you know, going back to the core of who you are and why you exist. What is your purpose? What is your promise to your customers? Then how do you live out that positioning, who, you know, to your key stakeholders, to your key audiences? And then what's a name that illustrates that, that in a dynamic, new, modern kind of way, as well as the visual identity, and then the brand story behind it all too. So that brand story needs to reflect a new personality and kind of a new tone of voice for the organization. And you need to make sure that your employees are capable of delivering that as part of their customer experience, and that your customers feel something different as a result of the rebranding. You're really kind of giving them a new brand to own in their own minds. So it has to fit perfectly in what they anticipate from you. And it has to show a lot more promise than what they've experienced in the past as well.
And my assumption is that there are two different approaches, or maybe more than that, when you're working with a company that either has a very historic, very strong brand, and maybe there's something that's polarizing that's causing them to change their packaging on their rice or packaging on their maple syrup and name in essence itself, which is a very different experience from when you're rebranding a company that maybe just never got its own brand off the ground, actually.
Very true. Yeah, we kind of look at it. There's two buckets of reasons that you would rebrand. The first is need to rebrand. And then the second is opportunity that will be presented by rebranding. So under that bucket, first bucket of need, it's things like maybe a merger or an acquisition or new leadership of the organization. Something structurally has changed that requires a new branding. Now, that may also include those organizations that have a brand that just doesn't work anymore or never took off or never got off the ground initially, or that they kind of come under a lot of pressure, perhaps crisis, and are needing to look at coming up with a new brand to move forward in a less, you know, encumbered way. Then you've got the opportunity. And those are organizations that things may be going perfectly well, but you're wanting to expand into a new customer set, maybe geographically. You've got an entirely new corporate growth strategy. You're needing to change because of the external environment, and you want to grasp the opportunity that repositioning yourself to the marketplace may have and how that can really deliver growth. It's all about growth at the end of the day. That's the reason you would pursue a rebranding.
So what are the first steps that you do when you start working with an entity and they say, "Hi, Jim, we're here to rebrand"?
So going back to what I said earlier is we really want to make sure that they understand what a brand is. Because if we're going to go through this process of standing one up, a new one up, is we got to make sure that they embrace the power of a brand and what it can do for their organization. So we usually start out with leadership kind of walking through, you know, good examples of branding and bad examples of branding and what works and what doesn't. And what do they see in their mind as good examples of brands and how it motivates them to choose that product or that service over a competitor. So get that baseline of understanding in place so then we can build upon that. Then you go through it. We have a four-step process. And the whole piece is assessment. It's really understanding, you know, where are you at today? You know, where are you going with the organization? What is your strategic, you know, growth plans look like? And how is that brand working for you so that we can figure out what to keep and what to leave behind? And that includes a lot of, you know, original research, stakeholder research, really getting to that kind of core of what the promises that you can make to customers in the future. And that enables you then to build a new brand on top of that.
Do you ever get to where you're working with the company and you realize early on that maybe it's not a total rebrand that they need to do? Maybe it's just a positioning rebrand or a packaging rebrand or just their story in general versus the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, we break those out very specifically because we see our definition of a rebrand is, you know, going back to the heart of your, you know, soul of your organization and making it new. That's what rebrand, the definition of it, means. So if you're just going to do a kind of a visual identity change or refreshing, making the logo and the website materials look a little bit more modern, that's a brand refresh. To your point, you know, you might need to reposition because you know, the way you've been going to market is not working anymore. And you need to kind of refocus on a new customer set, new customer attitudes and so forth. That's a repositioning. There's some great examples of that in the retail world right now with Victoria's Secret and Abercrombie and Fitch. So two retailers that were, you know, really carved out this, you know, perception of what their customer base was looking for that moved beyond it and they needed to catch up. And so those are now repositioning. They're not changing their name, really not changing their logos or any of their, you know, a lot of their visual identity. They're just bringing their product line and their go-to-market strategy up to that new, you know, new modern day consumer. Then your rebranding is really standing up an entirely new one. So a new promise, a new name for the organization, visual identity, probably changing your culture to be able to align with that and your customer experience so that you are delivering against that new promise to customers. So oftentimes, you may say, you know, you could probably achieve what you're wanting to achieve here with just a logo update and, you know, cleaning up some state, you know, things, as opposed to really investing in an entirely new rebranding of your organization.
Do you often find, especially lately, maybe that's a better word than often, that a lot of rebranding is being driven by cultural shifts of political correctness stemming from the ownership of the original entity or the leadership there?
A lot of that going on. Last few years, we've seen a surge in that. A lot of it was the result of the George Floyd movement and the fact that a lot of organizations could no longer try to pretend that things like Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben were entirely tolerable in today's society. And so those are examples of products that rebranded. An interesting one is, if you're a Harry Potter fan, is that there actually was a Quidditch league. People that played, a form of Quidditch on the ground, they weren't flying, but you know, they became upset with some comments that J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter series, was making on
anti-trans
on trans issues. Yeah. And so they changed the name of Quidditch in the United States to Quadball because they wanted to disassociate themselves from her and her feelings. So we've seen a real surge in that right recently. And I think it's a good example of how we as a society are more accepting of organizations rebranding. We kind of get it at times they need to do it. Yes, it's a little awkward. We have to get used to a new name and new domain to find them and so forth. But because of that, I think organizations are less fearless they are fearless, I should say, in letting go of the past and moving toward the future when it comes to renaming their organizations.
Well, especially with heritage brands where, you know, everything has been about the last 100 years of their existence. And then you have someone scratch on their surface and you unlock lots of things that in our climate today are so at odds at what the brand essence is supposed to be. So they're just scrambling and hoping that they can stay in business and not completely go out. So taking the risk of a rebrand is a lot better than taking the risk of just going to a graveyard.
Yeah. There's a couple of great examples I just cited in a Forbes story. There was a ski hill in, I think it was Vermont, somewhere in New England, and it went by the name Suicide Six. And there were probably six runs on it, and they were especially, difficult, challenging. Yeah. For a skier, you'd probably be very excited about that. But from a consumer standpoint, looking at it, you're like, let's not do anything to encourage that act of suicide. And especially in this environment with a lot of mental health discussions and so forth. So they changed their name to move on to something more positive and more fitting of today's society.
It's nothing that is better when you're polarizing as a brand. That is not the social commentary that you are hoping to have people engage with, or that goes viral.
Yeah. You have to live with it. Yep.
So you start working with a company, you have peeled back all the layers of the onion to find out, what's broken. And then also, I'm assuming, looking at what is actually working and needs to be kept. So it's not just throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Right. What you keep and what you leave behind. Yep.
And then what do you do?
So then you form up this new brand platform. And we really go at it just step by step, because leading the client through those, the importance of gaining consensus on each step, but the kind of education that happens in their minds as they see these steps forming up, I think is a good, it's brand education in work, so to speak. So we will start out with, the basic, okay, let's look at your positioning statement again. And some of them have them, some of them don't. So we'll get that out there. That clearly identifies who their key audiences are and what really differentiates them. Then how do you roll that into a very aspirational promise to customers? All of a sudden you see it, you know, the excitement starting to build because they've never expressed it that way. Or they've always talked about what they did as opposed to what the outcome of what they do has on their customers. And that's a big shift for a lot of clients. You know, for them to say, you know, I'm much more comfortable talking about what we do to, wow, let's talk about the end result, how it improves lives, how it makes lives better, easier, whatever it may be. That's a shift that then the brand starts to build upon as you go forward.
And then, so how internally do you handle, you know, from the top level all the way down, people who are might be a little more resistant to change, besides giving them who moved my cheese?
Yeah, exactly. Because rebranding is change. And that's what we try to tell clients from the very beginning is that, you know, you are going to have to build the right kind of engagement along the path to get there, and building consensus along that path as well, too. So, you know, we really work from the leadership down through the organization, because your leaders have to be fully invested in it, you know, and they're going to be the ones that have to articulate it to their teams and to their employee groups. And so they have to believe it, and they've got to be able to comfortably, you know, share that story as well, too. Then you've got middle managers who are critically important in terms of how the broader employee base views things. They've got to be bought on to the whole idea as well, too. So it's, you know, we have a very kind of structured process that we ask clients to go through. May seem like a, you know, a cumbersome effort. It may seem like it's taking a long time, but we keep saying doing so is proven to get the outcome that you want. Mm-hmm. So let's go through it and build it down through the organization to the point of even looking at, you know, what may happen as a result of this rebranding. How may we have some employees who will drag their feet and not accept it, or who will, you know, still cling very tight to the legacy brand because they've worked there for 15, 20, 30 years, and that's what made them successful. They don't want to give up on it. How do you deal with that? So that we can work through a lot of those kind of dynamics before you go public with the new brand. Because once you go public, your customers are going to turn to you, whether they're consumers or a B2B customer, look to see, do people within the organization believe in this and support it? And if they see cracks in that, you're not going to be able to get the whole impact of it.
How are you dealing with that internally within the organization? Like, what are some of the processes you put in place, the roles, the guidance? You know, how do you shake things up to make people more amenable to change?
So that's where you bring on all that change management kind of experience and training that we've gone through, because we knew that this is what clients needed to get through this whole process. And there's several different kind of techniques. I mean, you know, one of the very first things is an assessment of, you know, what is the culture of the organization like, and what way, you know, what are the actual impacts that this rebranding is going to have on different employee groups, and preparing them not only for, you know, for information, education, training, you know, that they need to be able to do it successfully. Because if they can't do their job successfully, then they're not going to be supportive of the impact this is having. You know, then you look at things like, you know, training managers to identify signs of people that aren't getting on board, aren't accepting it, and tips on how to resolve that. You look at ways to use influencers within the organization. You know, not oftentimes people of positions or titles that are influential, but more their own social networking within the organization that you could have as ambassadors, you know, and bring them on a little early, educate them in what you're trying to achieve, what the new brand is, how they can try to positively influence others within the organization as well that look up to them. So there's all sorts of different techniques that you can use, and it's really incumbent upon the client to embrace the fact that if they want to do this successfully, they need to employ all these different kind of techniques. They may have their own change management team who can come in then and actually execute against that, or in some cases, we actually lead those efforts working with those different employee groups.
And do you find that upper management or the worker bees are typically more resistant to change?
That's a good question. Because I think I don't know if it's a group or if it's individuals within that group. So we just had an example of a rebranding, mid-sized corporation based out on the East Coast. And it was a young, very dynamic daughter of the founder of the organization who is now running it. And she's the one that wanted to lead the organization through a rebranding because she realized that they had outgrown that original pot that the plant was in, you know, was in, and they needed a bigger pot to be able to grow dramatically
and make it her pot as well.
Yeah. And so she, she said, we're going to need to bring my father along. You know, we're going to need to kind of walk him through what branding is and why we should do this and, you know, present a good business case to him. And in his eyes, it was actually when he saw the proposed brand promise and name options that he finally said, I get it. I see how this can work harder for us. Mm-hmm. And this is the right thing to do. Let's move forward. So you've got that on a leadership scale. And then you've got employees who you need to make sure just don't think that we're just slapping a new name on the organization and everything is the same as it used to be. If you're really going to live out that new promise, there's something about their job that's going to have to evolve and be done differently. And they're going to have to be trained on that. And once they finally see that, then you kind of get over that hurdle on their side of, you know, I'm going to dig my feet in, or I'm going to duck and maybe this, you know, this corporate initiative will go over me and I won't have to be involved in it.
Right. And where do you tend to see things just go wrong?
Well, there's several places it can go wrong, which is one of the reasons we put together a very rigorous kind of project management approach to this all, because you can't get ahead of yourself in this process either. I think you see leadership kind of spinning around sometimes, you know, unwilling to make a decision on what the new brand promise or the new name options are. So that's one point where you kind of see things go a little go off track or mm-hmm. slow you down. Yeah, most definitely. Clearly, every organization underestimates how much work this is. They don't realize, the amount of effort it's going to take, the amount of time. Oftentimes they don't understand the kind of investment that it's going to take to do it right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've tried to address all those in our project management approach of dealing with it up front, you know, holding a budgeting workshop before we even come up with a new brand so that they can now understand what the cost implications may be, where might they have to spend to do things. You know, do they have, you know, hundreds of documents that need to be redesigned? Do they have signage? Do they have vehicles? Do they have uniforms? Do they have product packaging that needs to be updated? All those kind of things. Know what that's going to potentially cost before you go down this road. And then you won't, you know, find yourself regretting it or trying to whittle it down in a way that's not going to be productive.
And that can be a tremendous cost. I mean, this could be tens of millions of dollars of investment of change. It's not that it's, oh, we're just going to put a new logo on your website and off we go necessarily.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And then what else goes wrong?
Then I think you've got the management of updating all your branded assets, as we were talking about. You have to do this all kind of in a stealth mode, you know, of coming up a new packaging design, new website, new signage, all that kind of stuff, and actually kind of get it into production before you actually launch and go public. So that all of a sudden there, you start to find all sorts of interdependencies and things that people hadn't anticipated that can stretch out your timing even further. One of the interesting things is, if you operate on a national basis, you need to trademark your brand with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. That organization, I think the pandemic had some staffing implications on it, and their timeline for reviewing and approving requests has extended out dramatically. And so oftentimes you are having to make the decision on what your new name is going to be and submitting your application with 100% confidence that it's going to get approved. So the attorneys have to do a very rigorous scrubbing of any use of that name, common law, you know, even in state and local areas and so forth, so they can come back with a high confidence in the probability of it being approved, because not many CEOs want to wait a full year in this process to get trademark approval to then move forward with all those investments on updating assets. So they have to move forward with confidence that it is going to get approved. That requires a really good trademark attorney and really kind of a rigorous selection process to get you there.
And I will tell all of my listeners here today that TESS is an awesome platform to go in and Google and search around and find out if you are trademark worthy with your new name and nomenclature. But even before COVID, I think it took me, 14 or 16 months at one point to get our agency to be, you know, trademarked and approved. And that was after having operated for way more years than I should have been in business operating without having a trademark. So slowing down means like really slowing down. He's not kidding here. They're slow to start with.
Yeah, that's you know, and same thing for a domain search too. You know, just about every single domain has been, you know, used or purchased out there. And so, you know, we will always say pick the right brand name and then figure out a domain that you know, has that at its core, but that works around it. Any limitations of trying to purchase a new domain site. So,
yeah. And there's so many options with domains. Like you can go out and instead of having a .com, you can have a .net, a .store, a .tech, a .fun, a .online, a .website, a .press. And by the way, we have a domain client. So I know this world really well. That's why I'm able to do this. But, you know, just because, and what I see where people make mistakes is they're like, they go to the other domains and they're like, yes, I am now Stacy.store. But Stacy is also a .com. And so you don't think about that and you just are flying off at the radar and you don't dive in deep enough to see that you actually do have a potential name conflict and you're going to be more than red flagged for it. You're going to actually not be able to use that name that you've so carefully created or the mark that goes with the word as well.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
So this, you can see all the different places where things can go wrong.
It's a lot. I mean, it's easy. Like if you already have a brand entity and you're in business and you're like, I forgot to trademark it. You have some background to go into and some support that you can do and you can show and you can, your lawyers can petition and state that no, it's fair usage. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing with the whole reinventing and rebrand and starting completely from scratch is another world altogether.
Well, and it's because of that kind of trademarking hurdle that you're increasingly seeing businesses that are inventing names or, you know, kind of coining their own name because it's less cluttered, you know. And that's why you see a lot of the funny spellings of names too, because therefore you can get a domain because nobody's buying lyft.com. They bought lift.com. So, you know, that's why you see some of these kind of strange creations of names is because they can go to market quicker with it.
Yeah. And so you now have your trademark name, or it's coming on the horizon.
Hopefully.
You have rebranded. You have changed every last logo under the sun, including on your trucks, including on your packaging, including on your uniforms, everything, whole kit and caboodle. You are more than committed. The next thing that you have to do is actually market this and get it out there. So how do you help them with that rebranding initiative?
We will focus energies on kind of two things. First of all, what is your launch, you know, in terms of how you're going to go to market with this and create the news and excitement and how you're going to educate people on it, because there's a lot of education that needs to happen and you have to repeat that education to your customers over and over again before it finally sinks in. And then if you have customers where there's an impact on things they need to do differently, you know, informing them and educating them. So if you're a B2B company and you're changing your name, your customers probably have to go in and update them their system so they can pay you, so that they've got an updated legal agreement, so they've got updated materials to represent you and so forth. So you have to spend that initial launch time really educating people that you need to get them to, you know, to that right point of understanding. Long before you ever launch, you need to start planning what you're going to do post-launch to really bring that new brand to life and to have it create some new energy in the marketplace, build upon that education that you've done, and really differentiate you in the way that it is meant to be. Interesting, that's one thing that a lot of B2B companies especially don't invest enough in. They think that just launching and educating people is sufficient, and they don't put enough money behind the campaigns to lift it higher. And we'll always come back saying, oh, we should have spent more. Wish we would have spent more, you know. So, again, we lead a workshop before we launch to say, let's build that plan and make sure that you're investing appropriately so that you can get the desired results out of this whole thing. But it's, you got to bring it to life then. You really do. Your employees have to bring it to life in the experience that they deliver to customers, and then your marketing does as well too.
Well, Jim, how can people find out more about you if they're like, I'm considering a rebrand? Maybe.
So rebranding experts, it's pretty right to the point. Find us on, you know, website and social. We'll do a lot in terms of education efforts, you know, on what are the things you need to contemplate before you do it? What are the questions to ask? How to build a business case for rebranding and so forth? And then share, not evaluation of, but commentary on rebrandings that are taking place out in the marketplace so that others can learn from people's mistakes as well too.
I have a feeling that when you go into one of these massive rebrands, that you are uncovering a lot of slithering, slimy things under those rocks that you weren't expecting, where you're looking at things so closely that you're realizing that systems are broken, processes don't exist, and that this actually becomes a much bigger program that you're doing overall, because you have to not just shore things up. And if you're starting and creating a whole new brand, you're going in and you are retrofitting and building anew a lot of things to make the machine go.
You know, you're exactly right. We will find frequently when we are in the process mid-flight, and we'll get to the point where we talk about, okay, you know, let's be prepared to communicate to your stakeholders and your, you know, if you're B2B, to your customers, to your, you know, industry partners, so forth. And we'll find the companies don't have a good data set, you know, of all those people, or they don't even have a good platform with which to communicate to those people. And it's like, okay, let's get that in, you know, into the, you know, the mix here. You know, now here comes something that's an additional effort and additional cost than what they had originally anticipated too. I'll sum it up by saying I've never seen a rebranding project that met its original proposed deadline, because there are discoveries like that through the process that add time to the eventual launch date. Yep.
Yeah, we didn't rebrand, but last year I decided 2 weeks before a sponsor had fallen out of an event that we were hosting in a partnership for a major media lounge for celebrities, and the brand fell out. And I'm like, what am I going to do? We're committed. We have to spend the dollars anyways, regardless, to our partners to support them. And I'm like, I'm going to rebrand my agency.
There you go.
Cannot in a week. We did a complete rebrand, new logos, new signage,
new record,
new everything. I don't think I slept even 5 minutes for that entire week. I will tell you that. But, and that wasn't doing the essence of who we are or our ethos. That was just doing the lipstick and the gloss on the surface. So when you're working with companies, how long should they actually expect that these things take?
Well, I would say it's going to run at least 9 to 12 months, mm-hmm. Especially when you're talking about this comprehensive process that I've been sharing with you today. If you have if you're one of those kind of companies that has a lot more physical assets, you know, that need to be updated, it's going to take even longer.
Because, like massive tractor trailers all over the place.
Right. You know, think of when an airline rebrands, you know, and you got to paint airplanes. Well, you have to schedule.
And the luggage carts.
Yeah. You got to pull them out of, you know, use long enough to be repainted and dry and all that kind of stuff. So though the more assets you have, especially physical assets, the longer it's going to take to do. And that's where you decide at what point, you know, what can we have ready at launch to make the biggest impact possible and recognize that some of those things are going to be, you know, the branding will be flipped over as time goes on. And then you just communicate to customers, you know, over the next 8 months, you will see more of our planes or trucks or whatever, you know, showing our new logo and name.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, this was a super enlightening opportunity to hear all about the perils and the positives of rebranding. So thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Marketing Mistakes and How to Avoid Them. I look forward to chatting with you this next week. And if by chance you are thinking about rebranding, reach out to my agency after you have done it and worked with Jim, and we can chat about how we can actually position your brand into one of the biggest platforms in the world for getting attention, and that would be movies and TV shows on a global or a national, or you can even carve out regional, so that you can get your new brand, your new entity in front of as many people as possible and control the messaging through product placement and integration. I look forward to chatting with you. Have a great one.